what I want to talk about is in three pieces, really, three parts. Let's see if this little clicker works. The first part is raising some of the questions, some of the dimensions. How can you talk about outreach if you want to talk about it systematically as kind of a science that has goals and has methods and has data and things like that? And then, originally when I sent in a flurry of proposals to the convener, another one I sent in was addressing specifically newcomers, people who've been at it for less than a year, say, and they want to just kind of get up to speed on a number of things that most of us just kind of learn little by little, accumulate shortcuts and things to watch out for and standard operating procedure and really a hodgepodge of things. And so Steve Smith wrote back and said, can you incorporate that? So that's what I've done. The second part of this is going to be some specific kind of line items, some list type things. And I'm going to skip through that pretty quickly, but again, I'll tell you how to get that electronically, or I have three copies. I don't have very many. I have a few copies of the Word document, the full sentences and paragraphs version of what I'm talking about. So I can give those out, and I will add it to the website I give you as well. So then the third part of what I'm presenting is kind of the question I just posed to Anne is, suppose that all of these, this wish list of outreach things, suppose you had unlimited money and personnel to do all the projects you can imagine, and suppose that you have a willing audience, people who are really excited about what you do and you're tailoring things to meet their needs. If all those things are met, what might happen? What are the consequences? The big so what question. So those are the kind of three phases here. So the sense of outreach aims and the measurable objectives. Talking about tasks, you can define or you can describe outreach by the tasks that we perform or functions, skills needed for those tasks, resources, ranking them. So say you've got a variety of things. I've got some visual aids here. I just grabbed from the different centers that are at the University of Michigan. And these are all familiar, probably. Things like a photo contest, our Chinese Studies Center is sponsoring a photo contest. We have something called the University Musical Society, and we do some things together with them sometimes, some add-ons, educator oriented things that the Music Society is actually running. An old film series, it's the Center for Japanese Studies. We've been doing it for like 30 years now, it's been the longest running. And this is actually from Center for MIDI Studies. This is their speaker series. So, very attractive, professional looking things. Certainly that has gone up from the days of Xeroxing and cutting things. So that sort of is more attractive. But we still, as far as I know, and again, I've only been at this for 4 years or so, as far as I know, people have not found out in a comprehensive way, do those things work? Do they matter? You know, is it the same people keep coming, but is it doing what you want? So those are some of the kinds of things I want to raise here. So if you've got all these resources, these opportunities, why not rank them? Why not decide which ones you get the most bang for the buck, for all the time you put in, what you get from it? So quantify some of these things, or estimate is your best guess. And same with your mission, however you define it. Most people, I think, do a range of activities, and some of it is external outreach in the sense of people off campus, and part of it is kind of in-reach to things on campus, and a mixture of those. And some people do things very diverse, and only one little piece of it is either of those kinds of outreach. So it's a spectrum. My own case, I think, is at one extreme. I work for the Center for Japanese Studies, and our Title VI entity is the East Asia Center, but on a day-to-day basis, we have our own director, our own budget, so that's my employer's Japanese Studies. And my outreach is defined, when I hired in, it was defined as I would do outreach for K through 14, so community college. So, you know, if I get emails, requests, projects come up to collaborate in with other people, other constituents, you know, business and media and things like that, on a case-by-case basis, certainly, you know, I'm given approval to do that kind of thing. But by and large, one country, one language, education. So I think that must be an extreme of functions. So why should we study this? Why should we talk about it as a science? Identify the pieces and understand how these work. And you can, as we do for recording purposes, you can define it by numbers in terms of people reached. How far do you get requests from overseas? We're supposed to deal with Americans. The federal money is supposed to be geared towards Americans. And we have exchange students. We responded to somebody in Belgium who was interested in Kabuki. And so, you know, we'd help them anyway, but by that narrow definition, still we're serving Americans. And a huge underserved group, and I'll throw this out there, see if anyone wants to run with it or establish one of the special interest groups upstairs.
a huge underserved group is the dependents and the service members in the military. There's 50,000 of them in Japan. They step off post, they're in a foreign country. Step back on, they've got 4-H Boy Scouts, they've got, you know, brownies, all that stuff. So why don't we cater to them? And as far as I know, we don't. They're part of our constituents. There's 30,000 in Korea. I mean, huge numbers. Iraq, you're going to come back with, maybe out of all those people who come back alive, maybe 1%, maybe less than 1%, will go on to get graduate degrees in something related to their experience. But it's a huge group, so you can quantify what you do in terms of miles, I guess. And I put reach and grasp because that's a distinction like boxers will make or people will make. You know, you can reach this far, but you can't really get a grip on it. So I guess analytically you can also speak in terms of, well, you've got a web page, and you can reach anybody in the world who's hooked up, so your reach is that way. But grasp would be in the sense of you're interacting, you're engaging, you're serving them in a one-to-one basis. You can also quantify how frequently you have contact or how long is your relationship with the people you're serving. So these are kind of obvious things I'm just putting down on paper. Then qualitatively, this is a little squishier, but and I don't know how you would compare and contrast this, but certainly you can look at your own outreach and assess it in terms of to what extent have I widened the knowledge of the people I'm working with. Is it just incremental? Is it a whole new thing, a whole new compartment, a whole new category they've never even heard of, thought of, experienced? Extending their worldview, the idea of looking at things from the other person's shoes. And ultimately, as a sum total, the cumulative effort of doing all this over a period, maybe you're achieving changes in attitude, people who possibly are more respectful or inquisitive, self-aware of their own culture. And ultimately, in an operationalized sense, and seeing actually with your own eyes, what does this mean as a result? Do people change their behavior? Do they shop different ways? Do they talk about different issues? Do they prioritize their free time in another way? So essence of outreach. One part is visibility, and this is a recurring thing. It's a very basic, low level, but it's still important. It's letting people know you're out there, you exist. Getting your name wherever you can get it. Getting people to link to your website from whatever they do, because the different search engines work in different ways, and Google is kind of peer reference. So the number of other people who reference your page boosts your ranking. So when someone types in Japan for us, if we're listed on other people's websites, that's in our favor and puts us on the list. So that's not just visibility in an electronic sense, but physically going to conferences, you know, going to get involved in communities and other things like that. So visibility is a recurring base level, but important thing. And then accessibility, taking what you have and putting it in a form that your people can use. Easy to find, somebody just mentioned, there's Anne mentioned that there's 50% of teachers use web resources, but found it hard to find. So there's a need right there. Make your things easier to find if it applies to you. So by accessibility, I'm kind of a visual person, so I came up with this this picture that talks about making what you do more accessible. So you have to build the roads, that means connecting you to the people you're serving. Then you have to make the cars to get there, so a vehicle, and you can use that figuratively to mean a vehicle in the sense of, is it a workshop, is it a one-day event, is it a trip somewhere? So a vehicle in an abstract sense, so you've got the road, you've got the car, and then you've got the things that you put in the car and take to them, deliver. So as an outreach person, you do the whole thing. You create the network, you create the occasion or the vehicle for doing it, and you create the content, and do the whole thing from start to finish. And another image that gets at some of this too is building a bridge, kind of the on-ramp to the bridge, starting small, kind of taking baby steps so people don't feel overwhelmed with a huge amount of detail, the right amount of information, finding out with prior knowledge, what they already know, where you start from, and then actually leading them to a new place. So this sounds like business, I suppose, but I think we are a business in some way. We do have a product, we have products, we have services, we do perform functions for people on campus, off campus, with colleagues. And so why not make a list of them? Just out of curiosity, what exactly are your products? What are things you can identify as things? What are functions you provide? And then go through that list and ask of it, you know, the success of that. Define however you want to define it. Is this product successful? Is this service successful? Is this something that is a lot of time, but it's not really doing much, for example? If I modify that, if I add onto it, if I make some changes, Is that going to change the success? Is that going to improve, you know, my end goal? What is my end goal? And then in the scope, kind of within the big picture of your outreach, is this item, is this particular product, or is this particular service really the top of the list, or is it kind of off on the side? So these are very simple questions, but I think they give you a more rounded, three-dimensional view of what you do and what you could do and what you should do. The big questions, how big can we dream? How ambitious can we be? Do you want to, over the course of 12 years of the kindergarten going through all the school systems, do you want to end up with people who are very comfortable with the idea of studying a language at a beginning level or committing to several years of foreign language, of working as a co-worker with someone whose first language is not English? Are they perfectly happy with that, or do they kind of feel like there's a wall separating? So how ambitious, what should we, how big is it reasonable for us to think that we can practically, you know, attain? What kind of goal can we attain? Which function matters most? So you do a variety of things. You do reporting, you create materials, you do assessments, you try to attract new people that you haven't reached before. Which of those things is most important? Just kind of telegraphed here, abbreviated product and service, but of your products and services, which are most expedient? Which will get you to your goal kind of the quick and dirty way? Which is efficient? Which is efficient? What is kind of deep learning? Not just kind of giving people the ability to identify that this is Japanese and that's Korean, for example, or this is part of the 17th century. And this is, you know, this kind of identification of what is knowledge versus a deeper level of asking how do they do that? How, what is that related to? What fields of meaning is that connected to? So that deeper learning. And then the question again I pose in another way to end, taking that ideal picture of the most that you think you can do, now imagine a few steps ahead and that has come to pass and now you've attained that dream, that vision of outreach. What results from that? What actually happens? We've put a lot of energy into it and it's been a long-term project. Has it done what you wanted to do? Has it done what you thought it would do? What are the results of outreach? Does it change people's attitudes? To me, that's kind of the gold standard. Have attitudes changed? And it's hard to just, it's not like a quick litmus test to see if people's the before and after have changed, but to me, that's at the bottom of everything, if people's attitudes change. So here's shifting to the second part where there's a bunch of lists. I'm going to skip through this. I'm sorry. You can tell this is not a polished presentation because they say something that's well written and well conceived is very concise, and this is kind of gangly and a little bit lists on lists. So, as I said, I will put this in electronic form at the website I give at the end so that you can go through these things in more detail. So, one bundle of things, I have maybe a half dozen things, working practices. Again, it's aimed at people who are new to this. What are some kind of working habits that I've arrived at or my colleagues have arrived at that seem to make sense, that are efficient? Skill set. The session before this room, I have a PowerPoint. Some of you were at talking about my digital toolbox. These are software that I use frequently and I find very effective. It saves me a lot of time. They produce things very professionally. A third grouping of ideas and resources are lists that I subscribe to. Then under the category of promotional and advocacy things, and this is a short list, a hasty list. I think there are many things that you all can contribute to under this subject of what you found is most effective when getting your center known or your issues being heard. But I have a few things on that subject as well. two different things related to computers, and this is a screenshot showing my own computer that I use and the toolbar, the functions I frequently use, that I use so frequently that I like to have them right there as a quick launch toolbar. It's called, is right there on my screen. And the second is a screenshot of the folders that in the course of my outreach, I've categorized the things that I do and created folders for them. And so this is just a visual, and I'll have to add a little footnote that says peer outreach, for example, if I found things from you guys that I like, that's inspired me, I keep those in one place, for example. So that's a screenshot of the folders. And there's a lot. I'm kind of surprised. Even though I've explained how narrowly defined my job is, I go outside of my box, unfortunately. I do things that are not strictly in my my bailiwick. So I have a variety of functions, and each one is represented by a folder. Annual cycle, this is just a few things. When you're planning out your time flow, I guess if you talk about cash flow, you can talk about time flow. And again, for newcomers, to know that there are a couple punctuation points that are going to be coming up and to budget for them. Some of my bookmarks, again, places I frequently consult, just as a reference point. I'm not saying this is a final word or anything like that, but I'm willing to show you my working kind of behind the scenes. These are my folders, these are my bookmarks, these are my frequently used software. So for curiosity, you can look. Then food for thought. These are some websites that I like for a variety of reasons. This one was featured on NPR about a year ago, AppliedAmerican.org, and they've since given a new website just to their Women of Vacations called OneMinuteVacation.org. And what it is audio postcards, about a minute, that people send in from all over the world, and with a little blurb that says where they did it, why they did it, and so on. And it's just like it says, you listen to it, the sound transports you, it has immediacy, so it's appropriately called a one-minute vacation. And that's neat.
I have a question on that.
Yes.
Is that tourist doing that?
They're hobbyists, I guess. They're not often professionals.
But are they nationals of the country?
Sometimes. They're not all Americans. People, a variety of people send things in. There's a guy from the Netherlands that sent in these wind chimes on the north coast, the North Sea coast. And whenever the wind blows, the chimes go. So, I mean, some of them are like that. Other ones are... One was a place in Paris, and this group was improvising Dixieland music. This guy reported about a minute of that. And you hear another kind of hubbub and what's going on. So, again, the immediacy of sound, it takes you to wherever you are. There's a couple in Japan. I actually sent one in. There's these guys who sell sweet potatoes in the cold weather. And they're roasted in these charcoal beds, and they got a little pickup driving around. And they used to do it with a microphone, but now they have a loop tape, and it's yakimo, oishii yakimo. And it's, roasted.
I've never heard it was wasabi mochi.
Yeah.
Yakimo.
So, and they sell bamboo that way and tofu as well. They have different audio signals. And so I recorded that guy, and I took a picture of him as well. And so they featured that like a year or two ago. So that's a fun one. And then this is something I went on a study tour with Korea Society. And boy, was that, I don't think that was, that's really a wonderful thing. And I'm not strictly a classroom teacher, but they had a spot open. And since I do deal with teachers, they invited me along. So I put a bunch of pictures online and a couple of panoramas I made. I still haven't dealt with the video I've got. So that's what that is in my private web space, a folder called Korea and Japan, comparing Japanese and Korean perspectives on some issues. You all who have any Asia work know about the Education About Asia magazine. They give away their artwork in its original color. The publication, hard copy, is black and white, but you can download soft copy in the original color. And they give away an article or two each issue. At Utopia, this is something that George Lucas Educational Foundation has created. It's a hard copy magazine. It has a soft copy as well. And they have a newsletter, the GLEF, George Lucas Education Foundation. And that's really geared to technology. They feature people doing interesting things with technology at a K-12 level. And then if you haven't done this, this is really fun. It's still beta, I think. They're giving it away at Google. It's called Earth Google, earth.google.com. And you need, obviously, a fast internet connection, and a computer has to be able to process quickly. But it lets you, from a satellite perspective, zoom into any part. You can rotate the world, zoom in on places, change your perspective to kind of look at it flat on instead of bird's eye. You can rotate it around. You can tell to highlight different features. There's a way, I think, if you pay and have a paid version of the software, you can create movies. So you kind of tour around, go right down to, like, what's the name of that? Tiananmen Square in Beijing. You can kind of go right into one of the main gates. And some places have very high resolution, like Chicago, I understand. I think San Francisco. Traverse City, Michigan, where my parents live, you can get right down to the sidewalk level. Just kind of zoom right in. It's not live. They're all static pictures taken at some point. But it's pretty fun. And as an outreach person, why not go to some famous places or geographic elements of your parts of the world and just do screenshots, or actually lets you save them as images, and provide those. You've got the connection, you've got the computer, you do the work, and you present it to somebody to use. And then this seeing Julie reminds me here at her website. I always refer people to this because it's a one stop. It has all the Title VI centers, groups by region, and the language resource centers. And so that's a handy. I've memorized it now. It's very long, but I cite it so frequently that I've memorized it. Yeah, right, yeah. So that's another good one. So I'm giving myself a week to put all these things. It's a free website, a tripod. Instead of getting all the flashing commercial stuff on the home page of it, instead of calling it index like they expect me to do, I'm going to trick them, I think, and call it home.html. So hopefully you'll be able to do that and not get too much of the commercial stuff and be able to find this PowerPoint and some other links and papers I've written relating to the subject. So that was for newcomers, and this is much of what I said. This was an early version of the PowerPoint, so I'm going to skip through most of this. But again, what are we doing about it? What are we doing as outreach coordinators? In my mind, what it's about is making people interested in our part of the world, or any part of the world. I'm not monopolistic. I'm not insisting that people form a lifelong connection to Japan. I'm happy if they form a connection to any part of the world. If Japan is their door in, that's fine with me, and I'm willing to help them as far as I can. But I see, in a big scheme, in a big picture, our job is to open that door, to welcome people in, and if people want more, deeper, richer content, then I will refer them. But most of my energy is going into just getting people in the front door, to spark their interest. Establishing connections. Again, I apologize for zooming along. This is all going to be there if you digest slowly. But so that's what, to me, in my mind, that's my main job, is sparking that interest. We talked about visibility, getting access. This is, again, aimed at new people. Think of one principle is to do things with other people, doubling up. If they're convening something, see if there's natural synergy, and if you can add your material, your speakers, your topics, you can support them in any way. If teachers are coming together for their own event, rather than you getting to come, you have a better chance of having an audience, because if they've got to pick and choose between you and somebody else, you know, you've got maybe 50-50 chance. The idea of repurposing your stuff or other people's stuff, rather than making things from scratch. Some people still have dial-ups, like I do at home, and so be mindful of those people who don't have broadband connection and keep things small, easy to find. The multiplier effect, probably you all do this. This is not a brand new principle, but when I go somewhere and I've been invited to speak about Japan, I mention, by the way, there are these other world areas. So you become almost a spokesperson for your whole network, not just speaking for yourself. And they reciprocate as well. People go and mention us as well. It's a very one-on-one basic level. You know, archive yourself. Things happen with computers still. And one of your constituents is your supervisor, because at least in my case, they don't see the relevance of outreach. It's never finished. It's an unending job. It's making them see that this is valuable, it's important. So it's not only outreach, it's also within your own organizational structure to remind people that you're relevant and important. This is a long list of constituents, educators, librarians, homeschoolers. In Michigan, we have a lot of homeschoolers for whatever reason. And they have some organization, some structure, actually. Intermediate school districts, the service several districts, state departments of ed. Social Studies Council, we've initiated a relationship with ours in Michigan, and it's a very fruitful relationship. What you just heard from Anne, you know, go up the informational food chain to the top, start dealing with teachers before they're teachers. Nonprofits, okay, you're kind of an event planner, you're learn skills in networking, you have to have competence in your own area, curriculum development, materials, editing, knowledge of your constituencies, advocacy, reporting. If you really stop, it's pretty amazing. It's like jack of all trades kind of thing. You really have to do a lot of different things. As a function, you can be a consultant to others. Say there's a teacher who wants to do something, they don't know just how to do it, so you're kind of encouraging them, coaching, advising. An agent. In this case, you're actually taking the lead. Somebody's asked you for something, and you're acting on their behalf. You're doing something for them. An advocate, an author, transforming things that other people have made. As a newcomer, obviously, I don't have to go into any detail. Email is really a key medium. apologies for all this dense text. I know bad PowerPoints have too much text, and this is pure text. So, a word about hardware, and I talked about this before in technology, but aimed at newcomers again. If you only have $500, what I would suggest that's going to serve you well in all the different functions of outreach, a digital camera that does short movie clips, and ideally want to save them as QuickTime movies. A VHS recorder like this one here, it's very high quality recording. You can then compress it down to different things, MP3s, extended things, lectures or performance, excerpting from other sources to put on there as well. And this is what the previous session I talked about. It's that same website, but instead of home, it's called toolbox.html. Software, this, again, I went into detail in that earlier session, but these ones you have to pay for, the full version of Adobe Acrobat. It's got so many powerful abilities for outreach of capturing material and repurposing it and distributing it. QuickTime Pro for editing sound, pictures, stills. Audacity, this is free. This is, if you're going to start getting involved in recording your events and presenting them to people, this is a nice tool. Picasa, this is good for still images, albums. You want to create web albums. So what do we produce? I posed that earlier. Well, supplements to what people already have. You're not displacing what they do. You're supplementing what they do. You can do visual stuff. Narrated slideshows that people can download. They see the pictures. They hear the voice. Recordings of sound only. How can you evaluate what you do? How do you know that you've been successful? Testimonials. And it's not quantitative, but I have a folder in my email of people that send me thank yous and things like that. I don't know what they're worth, but I mean, they feel good, but I think there's more to it. I think it actually is telling you that what you do has done what you wanted it to do. Traditional surveys, paper and pencil sort of things. Using the participants' own standards, for them, what does success mean? And use that as a guide for your own. Generic forms that people can use in all different centers, not just one specific to your own area. Okay, this is the kind of the finish line here. So, taking action. So, we talk about science. We want to pose questions again and again in some kind of systematic way. So, this is a set of questions that come to my mind. So, look at each of your products or some of your main products and services and ask, how much impact is it having? Estimate, in whatever language and whatever terms you can classify that. Try to assess what you do. Then ask people who are currently your experts, your professors, your graduate students, how do they kind of get into what they're doing? What was it? Was it a person they knew? Was it an opportunity they had? Now, is there a pattern there? And if there is a pattern, if there is a main door into this stuff, because we're supposed to train the next generation of experts, then find out what that pattern is and really make it a wider open door, you know, steer more people to it. So this is an empirical question. I don't know the answer, but there may be some pattern. I know for Japan people, many of the people who are senior now were in the military in the 50s and 60s, and they were there for that purpose, but by the way, they got interested in Japan, and so they went to graduate school, and then they became professors. This function of taking events and performances and things, and your job as a conduit of getting it out to other people, how to streamline that? How to do it in the fewest steps possible to save you time, save you trouble? That's, again, an empirical question. What works best? Okay. What are the special strengths of a university-based, as opposed to, like, in Japan, we have Japan Foundation, Japan Society, other people who are putting educational content out there. What is it different about a university setting? What can we do, what can we offer that's not being repetitious? I mean, we all talk about some of the same features about Japan, but what is our strength? Let's play to our strength. Let's not do what other people already are doing. So that's a question to ask. And then the flip side is weakness. What are the limitations of university-based outreach? How to gather or showcase best practices. We have Outreach World, which is a place to put things that we've done. And then when you talk about a science that has terminology, how can we use terms in a uniform way when we're talking about what we do? If there was a standard of practice, one that came to my mind in reference to this conference is when a person presents, and if they like to use this visual stuff, that's fine, but there should be a paper version as well for people who like to read full sentences. not the visual people, but the verbal people. And there should be something paper that people can take with them. And I did it last session, but not this. I don't have something to give you. But a lot of times you're excited for a day or maybe 2 days, but then your normal routine kind of wears you down and you get back and that stuff goes in a folder. But if you have something physical sitting on your desk or wherever, it reminds us that, oh, yeah, I was going to do something about that. So that would be an example of standard of practice. When you're presenting to your people, provide an electronic presence for it, provide a full written presence, and provide a physical presence. Yeah. So this is the third and last part what I asked. And what if we do all these things? What if we know what we do best? We play to that strength. We achieve the best that we can reach. Well, what kind of world might that be? And to my mind, one thing, it might be normal to take foreign language. Michigan has created a requirement for all seniors starting in 2012 that they have to have 2 credits of foreign language, which isn't a lot of credits, but it's every single person who graduates, which is only like 75-80% of the people who enter high school, but still, it's a step. Domestic issues will implicitly, explicitly be made comparative. Classes other than social studies also will reference some of the ideas, intercultural ideas. And conversations with people who are different to yourself will be animated and something to look forward to. It won't be something that you kind of steer away from people you don't know or understand. So these are some things that I can imagine that would be the result. If outreach took its fullest form and all these things were normal, I mean, that would be a wonderful world.